Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Roger Jones, owner of VegasTicket.com. VegasTickets.com is a ticket broker who buys and sells tickets to a variety of things. Roger Jones, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you, guys. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Thank you for being here. So, first of all, tell us in general what a ticket broker is compared to a ticket seller.
Generally, a ticket broker is a professional who buys and sells tickets 100% of the time. They're dedicated to the industry. They have a vested interest in bringing buyers and sellers together versus a typical seller would be an individual who might have an extra pair of tickets, two or three tickets that they just can't use for a certain event.
Now, do you purchase tickets as well yourself for your company?
Absolutely. So we use a variety of resources to acquire tickets and build up our inventory both in Las Vegas and around the country.
So do you buy from the venues themselves?
Absolutely.
All right.
So I used to do this. Now this is going back like 15 years ago. So, I used to call it ticket fishing. And so I would log on to Ticketmaster and I had macros to open lots of windows and try to buy as many tickets as I could of certain events. And then Ticketmaster kind of figured that out and did things to thwart it. So do you hire people to do that for you or how does that work? Or if I wanted to sort of take a chance, for example, I entered the lottery one year for Masters tickets, Masters Golf. Could I contact you ahead of time and say, what events should I be going after to try to get tickets for?
Sure. A couple of different great questions there, and so I'll try to break it down. So first and foremost, we do buy tickets from venues, artists, promoters, and primary platforms like Ticketmaster or AXS or Flash Sheets. We buy the tickets as fans, just like anyone else, and adhere to the buying processes that everyone is required to behave in accordance with. What a lot of the primary platforms have done, as you mentioned and alluded to, they've identified what they call reseller behavior. So if you look at a set of tickets and you have it up on your screen and you decide that you don't like them and you throw them back into the hopper and say, give me something new, and they give you something new and you don't like that, then you're like, well, I really don't like those. Throw them back in the hopper, give me something new. Then they'll deliver an online message to you that says, sorry, unavailable, move to the back of the line. Basically. So the average fan, once they're issued a set of tickets, keeps them and says, oh, great, I have tickets, I'm going to go to the show. Then in regards to buying tickets, I think the second part was buying tickets and do we hire people outside of what we do? No, we do it all in-house. We're buying them directly from, as I mentioned, the artists, promoters, or venues. We build those relationships and try to acquire them two at a time, just like anyone else.
Well, but obviously you want a lot more. You want a lot of tickets, right? So do you have a lot of people working in-house that buy them for you? Or
yeah, we have a large staff. We have a large staff. And obviously, because we are a ticket broker, we adhere to the limits as established, and we buy them on web browsers or on machines two at a time, all within the terms and conditions of their primary seller.
Okay, so if I wanted to get into this, can I call you up and say, hey, I want to start looking to buy tickets that I know I can flip at a profit. What should I, can I ask you, what events should I be going after?
Well, I think that people who want to get into the ticket business, there's plenty of online information, YouTube information that's out there about how to get into buying and selling tickets. For me, obviously, I'm not looking to create competition, so I'm not looking to share a lot of industry secrets.
Oh, no, I don't want to go shop around to a whole bunch of ticket buyers You know what I mean?
You want a business relationship with Roger.
Exactly.
Great, great. Yeah. So if you want to have a business relationship with us, and we can create a relationship. So it starts in a couple different ways. Our first question would be, why do you want to do it? Is it truly to make money or because you have extra tickets? So the most common thing here in town is that casino players, whether you're local or visiting, receive tickets from a casino, or they have the right to acquire tickets.
That's
from
where I was going, actually.
Absolutely. So it pertains, obviously, to a lot of our listeners here today. So players who receive tickets from a casino can acquire them in a number of ways, whether they do a bill back, whether they pay for them using points or cash, or they're truly an RFB comp with a casino. When they have those tickets, they should definitely reach out to us because we are buying those. And truly, the value of those tickets could be above or below the printed value on the ticket or the acknowledged price on the ticket, because a lot of times the tickets will be printed comp. So all they have to do is reach out to us via orders@vegastickets.com or roger@vegastickets.com or call the office at 702-795-7880.
We'll have those links and the number in the show notes.
Thank you.
Yeah. So now the casinos don't like it when you resell tickets they're giving to you as comps. I remember in the old days of the Tyson fights, they actually had police and security, back in the fast food area where a lot of the ticket buying and selling would go on. And they actually arrested people for selling their tickets. Is it illegal to sell a ticket that you've been given as a comp?
Or even
if you bought it?
There's no published Clark County ordinance that states that you can't resell a ticket that was given to you.
Okay.
But casinos have actually acknowledged that they realize that players do distribute them in some other fashion. So once the casino has given it to you, they acknowledge that you may attend and you may not. What they have done is to thwart the ability for you to resell the ticket is they've restricted the way in which you'll get those tickets. So now, instead of getting a ticket for an event that might happen on a Saturday, you could get it on a Wednesday night or a Thursday morning. Now you can't get it until the day of the event, until 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which changes the whole value of that commodity.
Well, that was why the exchanges were happening back in the fast food area, leading to the arena where the fights were. And, you know, it doesn't surprise me that the casinos would handcuff people that haven't done anything illegal. They do that to us as Advantage players all the time. So, and the casino can sort of cut you off in the future if they know you're reselling.
Absolutely. So when you mention Advantage, when you use a ticket professional, a ticket broker, you're executing on an advantage. The advantage is that you're using a professional who does this all day long, much like the gamblers who listen to the show. They play the odds every day. They know what is favorable to them. So for us, when we're acquiring tickets, we know the ways in which to play on the odds in our favor and how to acquire those tickets. Now, for casinos, when you're in the food court and you were exchanging tickets, buying and selling tickets, the catch-all for them was always to trespass you because you're conducting business on their property, so you don't have that legal right. So they're like, hey, you're just mingling around with the intent to do something other than what you're supposed to be here for. We're going to ask you to leave. And that's how you would get escorted out. And there was a previous ordinance on the books that said that if you bought or sold a ticket for more than the printed value on the ticket, it was illegal.
But that ordinance is no longer in effect.
That's
in
correct.
Nevada or in
that
Clark
is,
County or
that
something.
That is correct.
And casinos still, though, have the right to discontinue their relationship with any player who gets caught doing this. I mean, they can do that for any reason at all.
That's correct. Like any business, they have the right to refuse service to anyone. And I would like to take a quick step back and mention this about the ordinance. The Clark County ordinance is still on the books, but it's been superseded by a state legislation, a state law that was passed 4 years ago in 2017 and then updated in 2019.
Uh-huh.
So somebody could argue, I bet you that argument is out there, that the Clark County ordinance could not be superseded by state law. But our understanding from both lobbyists and legal is that the state law prevails.
And do you only handle tickets? So I know some of our listeners might resell RFB weekends and things like that. Do you handle that stuff too, or just tickets?
Our specialty is tickets. I've found that that's the space that we're best in. We're not great at adventure tours. We're not great at booking hotel rooms. We're just really good at our niche, which is tickets.
But on your website, there are, I think I saw that you sell experiences, which would include more than just tickets. Is that rare, or like just for Super Bowl or something, or how does that work?
So we believe that's where ticketing is going, that experiences is what everybody wants now. So 20 years ago in ticketing, we were all happy to stand in line and get two tickets, score two tickets to our favorite artist and go to a concert. Now, both the artist and the primary, so the artist, let's just say...
Lady Gaga.
So Lady Gaga wants you to come and see her and experience her show. So they want to add in hospitality. They want to add in premium seats. They want to add in a photo op. They want to add in a meet and greet. They want to sell you a poster or a CD. So they bundle it and package it any which way they can to try to maximize profitability. So they find that the majority of the money on artists who perform are not related to actual ticket sales, but to the experiences. And that's where we really do see the ticketing going over the next 5 years, is everything will be geared toward experiences, because that's how they can justify raising the prices in multiples that they are. They can take a ticket that used to sell for $100, give you a poster and a plastic, bullshit laminate, and call it, it's worth $200. And, or they'll charge you more for an aisle now. If you want to sit on an aisle, a regular ticket might be $100 an aisle. They're saying, oh, if you want to sit on an aisle, we're going to charge you $150. So they're looking at every dynamic and all the data to try to maximize profit. And they really don't care if the artist sells out. They are just, as long as they can maximize and dynamically price enough experiences and ticketing combinations to pay the bills, then that's what matters to them.
Some of our listeners bet a lot of money and might be interested in going to play at a place specifically for the edge they get in reselling the tickets, right? Because you could play a break-even game with the house, but if you can make a few thousand dollars off the tickets you're going to get, then that's certainly a worthwhile endeavor. So what are the most valuable tickets in town?
In general, going forward, not necessarily today.
Well, both today and in general going forward. Oh, and does that include golf too? Is like golf at Shadow Creek, is that considered a ticket or no?
No, the golf to have a tee time at any of the golf courses here in town is not considered a ticket. Okay. It's not generally a ticketed item. It's a reservation system. In regards to tickets, historically, meaning the recent past, over the last 18 months, Lady Gaga has been the number one day in and day out ticket that you would want to have the potential to earn extra money on. It used to be, call it 5 to 10 years ago, it would have been a Cirque show, maybe
La Rev or
it could have been. Well, La Rev isn't a Cirque show, but like Cirque O at the Bellagio would have been the ticket to have. And you'll find now that with the multiple Cirque shows in town and each show performing 10 times a week, that there's just not the demand that there used to be. But the ordinance, going back to the ordinance, stemmed from an initiative that Steve Wynn started at the Bellagio in regards to O, which included posting signs on your way into the venue that said, if you've paid more than the printed price on a ticket, please see management, because they would reimburse you and ask you where you got your tickets, because they wanted to try to prosecute anybody who was reselling their product.
Wow.
But in regards to, yes, advantages. So moving forward, so Lady Gaga continues to be a hot seller. As of right now, she's scheduled to end her performances in May of this year. She's hinted over her last few shows over New Year's that she would possibly extend for another year, which would be very good for the city because it's brought in a lot of visitors from an international standpoint. In regards to sports, Vegas is fast becoming the sports destination. We have hockey, we have WNBA, we have college sports, we have AAA baseball, we have rugby seven tournaments, we have all the major tournaments for basketball in March for collegiate basketball. Obviously, the Raiders and Allegiant Stadium are going to be a huge draw this starting this fall. So going forward, if you have a sports ticket, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention NASCAR. Moving forward, sports tickets are always going to be a steady earner in town as well.
Do you think it'd be a good investment to buy season tickets for the Raiders? They wanted a lot of money for them.
Yeah, the private seat licenses have both positives and negatives. Number one is when you own a PSL, you own a piece of real estate. And that real estate will allow you to see the value grow, or it could take a step back. But you'll always have the ability to sell it. That is not restricted in the terms and conditions of the contract. So that will give you the ability to clarify also the debate about who owns that ticket. You actually own that seat in the building, and it's yours as long as you conduct yourself in accordance with fan conduct at the building. And then if you pay your annual renewal for the actual ticket price, then you can always have that seat, so they can never take it away from you.
So we've been talking legally. Let's say I have a pair of Lady Gaga tickets. What are my legal rights, or what are the venue's legal rights?
It's the debate that if there was one thing I could solve today in the ticket brokerage business and the ticket resale business, I'd love to solve. The debate is, do you actually own that ticket, or is it a revocable license? Historically, on tickets, they would print that a ticket is a revocable license. If you were a Los Angeles Dodgers season ticket holder and you owned 81 home games, when you receive those hard cardboard tickets in the mail, on the back of it, it would always say it's a revocable license. The revocable license always stemmed from fan conduct, basically. Would you conduct yourself in a manner that's appropriate for the event? It was also their way of saying if you don't pay for your bill, we can take the tickets away from you. Where the argument has shifted a little bit is that content providers, the people who put on the performances, are saying that they have the right to take the tickets away from you without notice and without cause, whether you pay the bill or act appropriately or not.
And that's undecided legally?
It's undecided legally. It's undecided legally. It's up for debate in many states. And there are arguments in many municipalities about it. In some states, tickets that are owned by married couples have been considered community property and divided in divorces. And in other states and in other cases, they've been identified as not an asset and that it's actually owned by the content provider and you are just licensing it as their terms and conditions would indicate.
Okay. So let's, hypothetically, it's a Thursday evening at 4 p.m. The Golden Knights are playing in town. At 4 o'clock, if I call you up, will you usually be able to fix me up with tickets?
100%.
And at 6 p.m., would I usually be able to get tickets?
The game starts at what time? Seven?
7:05, 7:15. Yes, absolutely. So the day of the being able to purchase tickets the day of is still relatively simple. As long as the caveat to your question is will you be able to purchase tickets in your budget? Because the budget may be, it doesn't matter. The budget could be you're inquiring about tickets a week before, a month before, or an hour before. It's always going to come down to your budget. From a ticketing standpoint, we can always source the ticket for you. I would say it's extremely rare that we can't source a ticket for an event same day for you. And so with that being said, it will come down to your budget. Are you willing to know that, hey, this game is sold out no matter what, and you can't get a ticket, but if you call Vegas Tickets and my team, yes, we can get the ticket for you, but it may be X factor of the printed value on the ticket.
So $1,000 seats are not unheard of by any means.
It's become more rare that they're that expensive because the supply has been increased tremendously for all events, across all events here in Las Vegas.
Is there some point after the game starts when suddenly the tickets take a huge dive and you might be able to get in very cheaply because the tickets is just really worthless at that point?
Sure. Great question. So from a professional standpoint, we expect a certain amount of leakage or distressed inventory. That's what we invest in. So if we figure X percentage of the inventory that we're going to buy may go unused, we may sell a certain percentage at a premium, we may sell a certain percentage at par, what we paid for it, but in the end, looking to end up with a profit. The most common reason why you'll see extremely discounted prices right up at game time or after is because the average fan who might be on a resale platform just like, hey, you know, this is going to be worthless to me in 5 minutes. I need to take something for it. So I better take something is better than nothing.
Oh, so that's coming from a fan, not from a ticket broker.
Yeah, typically professional resellers will take less. We understand distressed inventory is part of the nature of our business. We also understand what we call dead inventory, tickets that will go unused as part of our model. Everybody has a different adage to it. The one thing that we try not to do is like basically train people to always wait that late and then therefore offer them a deal. I would much rather throw a ticket away than offer it to someone who is, for lack of a better word, being a mooch. If they're a strategic buyer and want to take advantage of the scenario, then I have no problem with that. But if somebody calls and says, hey, I know it's a $300 ticket and you're offering it for $100 and the game starts in 20 minutes, will you take $20? I don't have a need for that person. And the other thing about a ticket is it truly does have an expiration date and time. It isn't like when I like to tell a story about milk. When I was a kid, you know, mom would reach in the refrigerator and look at the expiration date on the milk, and it might have been 2 days ago, and she'd smell it, and she'd be like, oh, it's still good. Well, that isn't the case with a ticket, you know. Oh, wow, I have this ticket for the Knights versus Pittsburgh. That was 2 days ago. Ah, it's still good. It's not the case. So that's why tickets are so unique in that at some point they have no value.
But they have some value at the end of the first quarter.
That is also true.
They have some value at the end of the second quarter. Presumably milk goes bad all at once, or your mom's nose is sensitive to that. But it's so there is a time period where it has rapidly diminishing value, but it still has something.
But you would rather throw it away than
say that.
No, I'm open. I'm always on distressed inventory. I'm open to realistic offers, but not an offer that I would say would be insulting. Baseball, like if you were holding a Dodgers ticket at for a 6:05 game on a Friday night in LA, I wouldn't consider first pitch at 6:05 to be the expiration of my ticket. Knowing that fan base, I would consider maybe 7:15 to be the expiration of that. Because you figure with traffic in LA and parking and getting in, it might, you know, the vast majority of fans might not settle into the stadium until 7:15. So as they're going toward the stadium, they could be buying still.
How do you physically get the ticket to somebody in LA at Dodger Stadium when you're here in Vegas? How does that work?
So one of the real positives about the ticket business that's changed in the last 10 years is that everything is moving toward digital platforms, and transferability of those tickets has become very easy. So you don't have where 20 years ago, if you owned Dodgers tickets, they were the hard cardboard tickets, and the only way you could get them was to put them in somebody's hands. Now everything's digital. It's in my account, online. I have the ability to click, transfer, email them, send a screen snapshot, barcodes, QR codes.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that must have been a real boon for the industry.
Well, it's both a blessing and a curse. So now everything is digital and you have the ease of transferability, but all the artists, the content providers have the ability to track that transferability. So now they're saying, hey, here's Bob Smith. He owns two tickets to Las Vegas Aviators, and he's transferring it to Susie Jones, who's now transferring it to whomever.
Oh, they know all the steps in
between. They can follow the bouncing ball.
Wow.
And every step. I noticed
that some of the venues, you have to pay more if you want a printed ticket.
Yes.
They charge more for that.
Because to them now, it's the opposite of convenience, and it's an inconvenience to have it. Because now I have to have a thermal printer. I have to have paper stock. I have to have a staff member who has to address you. So the economies of scale are going away when they have to have somebody to print you a ticket. Whereas when everything's digital, we generate it. We can have less staff. We can be more efficient. They can watch the bouncing ball as it travels from point A to point B to point C.
Very good. We're talking to Roger Jones, VegasTickets.com. We have several more questions, but first we're going to do some commercials. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In January, they have the $500,000 spin to win. Every day, Monday through Thursday, play $500 through at slots or $2,000 through at video poker, and you get a spin, limit 4 spins per day. It has been 2 weeks that we've been doing this so far, and my average this year is approximately $12 a spin on a $2,000 coin in. That makes it 0.6% for the first $8,000 coin in you spend every day. There are a lot of games there that were basically even to start with, and adding the 0.6 makes it $50 a day for playing $8,000 coin in. On January 28th, we have the third week of the free video poker classes. The game is 9-6 double-double bonus quick quads wheel poker. This is a game where you pay 7 coins per line. 1 extra coin for the quick quads, 1 extra coin for the wheel. What quick quads means, it is you get 3 of a kind and the rank of the other 2 cards add up to the rank of the trips, such as 7-7-7-4-3 counts as a quick quad, or 10-10-10-5-5. And you get paid for 4 of a kinds when you get that. To make the math work, they charge an extra coin for that. What the wheel does is every time you get a quad or quick quad, the wheel spins. The average spin is approximately 137 coins. The strategy is not always intuitive. Quick quads has its own unique structure to it. Like, you will hold 6663, you will not hold 8884, and that makes no sense to people until it's explained to them, which is my job on January 28th. So classes start at noon. There is 1 class that day, starting at noon until the last dog dies. At predicted.org, there's a market where you can place small bets on the occurrence of various political events, mostly but not entirely in the United States. There's a lot of them deal with the impeachment process. Who are the various candidates going to be during the election? Who's going to win? Who will survive until the end of their term, etc.? Gambling with an Edge listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predicted.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of video poker games. They have gold membership, $8.95 a month, or $79.95 a year. This allows you to get corrections on most of the games. The game of the week is the new version of Dream Card. Dream Card is one of the very few games where They changed the rules of the game but did not change the name. In this case, they changed it. Plays the same to the player, meaning periodically the fifth card you draw is a dream card, which automatically turns into the best card scenario. What used to happen is you would get these relatively frequently and you would play with them. What now happens is you get it rarely, but when you do get it, three different hands in the background are dealt, and you're given the best one. So that's an invisible process to you. The end result is approximately the same. You get a slight bonus by playing the dream card scenario, then playing the regular game itself. The strategy of the game does not change, but you get them less often these days with a higher value dream card than you did before. You can tell which is which by looking at the help screen. All right, we are back to talking to Roger Jones, VegasTickets.com. So we're taping this 1 week before it actually airs, and we're taping it 2 weeks before Super Bowl. This is airing 1 week before Super Bowl. Now, the Super Bowl is happening in Miami this year, which last time I checked is a couple thousand miles away from Las Vegas. Does VegasTickets.com sell tickets to the Super Bowl, and how are you involved in that?
Thanks again for having me here today. So VegasTickets.com is involved in the Super Bowl. It's also on our website as one of the experiences that we offer every year. And so I just got back from Fort Lauderdale. I was there setting up our office in Hollywood, Florida, where we'll be working every day starting the 20th of this month. And then for the last 3 days of before the Super Bowl, for the 31st of January, the 1st and 2nd of February, we'll be just a few blocks from the Hard Rock Stadium in Florida.
So why is your physical presence required for that event that it's not required for selling tickets to Lady Gaga?
So the Super Bowl is one of those events that are still the majority of the tickets that are issued are hard paper tickets. It's been one of those coveted bucket list tickets that if you're a sports fan that you want to have, much like a Masters badge or a Kentucky Derby ticket. So they're still doing hard tickets, and those tickets are issued to obviously there's a whole algorithm of how the tickets are distributed by the NFL, but primarily in the host city receives a certain percentage of the tickets. So the city and community of Miami and Dade County and Broward County are receiving a certain number of tickets for the event. So there's a lot of tickets there. That's first and foremost for a reason to be there, so you can buy from individuals. Secondly, sponsors and promoters will be coming into town, and they'll have tickets because they work with the NFL and the NFL has issued them tickets. And then finally, players, team executives of the non-participating teams will be there as part of the whole week leading up to the Super Bowl, which includes events like Taste of the NFL, where all 32 cities have a chef that brings a food item to fruition the night before the Super Bowl as part of a buffet, a Vegas-style buffet that you can indulge yourself in. Then there's the NFL experience, which is former players signing autographs. Families and children can participate in like a punt, kick, and throw contest. They can exchange autographs with players. They can do hold their hand up to, you know, some of the biggest linemen ever, plastic or ceramic molds, and just there's a lot of interactive that goes on. So the week around the Super Bowl is actually more the game itself is actually a culmination of everything that goes on throughout the events.
So I've been to one Super Bowl in my life. It was in the mid-80s. It was in New Orleans. It was Joe Montana's 49ers versus John Elway's Denver Broncos. And as we went to the stadium, there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people selling tickets for $50 a piece.
because it looked like, from a fan's point of view, there were more tickets than there were people interested in that matchup.
That's amazing. Look, I mean, to look at that from today, you know.
So I don't know how rare that is, that you have all these tickets going unused and selling for a low price, or was that just a...
Times have changed.
A one of.
So the first thing that's changed in the last, you know, since the mid-80s, 30 years ago, is that the ticket price has changed. The cheapest ticket right now to go to the Super Bowl from an initial price, there's a lottery that's done that the NFL typically does 500 seats at $500. And
that's the cheapest.
That's the cheapest. And then the real – so if you're not lucky enough to win that lottery – then it starts at $950. So then you go $950, $1,250, all the way down to the most expensive Super Bowl ticket this year, face value between the 30s is $5,000. So when
per
people,
ticket,
per
and
ticket,
most, and most people buy two,
yeah,
or many that, people buy two.
That's the initial price. Right now, the resale price, predicated on the four remaining teams, is ranging from $3,200. On the resale side, all the way up to $15,000 on the resale side. So there's a big.
So that $3,200 ticket, that started out a $500 lottery ticket?
Started out as a
$950.
A $950. Ticket. Yeah,
$950. Okay. And if I had one of those $950 that you're selling for $32, what can I get from you for it?
Almost triple. We're buying in the $2,600 to $2,700 price range.
Oh, wow. So your margin is not...
Margin's razor thin.
Wow.
Razor thin. And it's just, it is truly, you're moving a large dollar commodity for a very small margin. And that's just the way
so
it is.
I
mean, people
volume.
Expect, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
People expect that, you know, if you have it, you basically have to pay somebody not to go. You have to, if I had a Super Bowl ticket and I had the ability to go... you would have to basically pay for me not to go. Right. Now, when you went to the Super Bowl in the mid-80s and it was in New Orleans and people were selling tickets for $50, if I'm not mistaken, I have to go back and look, but this would have been either the third or the fourth Broncos Super Bowl, and the previous ones they'd been blown out in all of them. And Montana was at his peak and people could have looked at it as, hey, it's just another blowout. The other thing is which is still true in the city of New Orleans, it's illegal still to buy, to resell a ticket at more than the printed value on it. And they've left it that way because they have so many events there. They have Final Fours. They have regional basketball tournaments. They have Super Bowls. They have bowl games. And so they've left that law on the books. So if I was there and I had an extra ticket and I didn't think that there were a lot of fans going, I would consider myself in a distressed situation, and getting $50 to buy a few hurricanes and some shucked oysters is better than having dead cardboard in my pocket.
All right. And you've been to a lot of these Super Bowls as a seller?
I've been to a lot of them as a seller, and I've only been into one, much like you've only been into one. I went into the most recent one in Glendale, Arizona, which featured the Patriots and the Seahawks. The Seahawks were vying for their back-to-back years of the Super Bowl, and they were denied that on the infamous goal line stop, the interception.
Where they threw a pass and was intercepted rather than feed it to Marshawn Lynch.
That is correct.
And many analysts say that was definitely the smart play for the Patriots to make, or the Seahawks to make. Many of the Seahawks players do not buy that argument one bit.
And the real football analysts... look at a story that recently, aired shortly after that Super Bowl. I believe it was on ESPN, where they showed specifically that the advanced scouting team of the Patriots and Bill Belichick had seen the Seahawks execute that play once before and practice it in practice the week of the game in case it was inserted. And as a result, they were able to stop that play from happening.
Yep. And sometimes it has to do with the way Russell Wilson moved one foot. He pointed a foot in a particular way, which was a signal to somebody to be ready for it, and the defense was ready for it. it's an amazing preparation that the teams go through, because there must have been 100 different plays that they're preparing for in case, and you don't know which one is going to be. All right. Do you have any stories of the most expensive ticket, group of tickets, set of tickets that you've ever sold that you share?
Well, we've been very blessed to bring experiences and tickets to a lot of famous people, a lot of and tickets to many, many different events all around the world. But the most expensive tickets most recently was Mayweather-McGregor.
Uh-huh.
Where,
oh, yeah, I can see that being
where tough. Tickets weren't available until 10 days before the event, and people were traveling in from all over. There was so much hype around the event, but ticket distribution and the primary sale didn't happen until 10 days before, and people were trying to book trips, and they were paying in advance of actually getting here to town. And we sold tickets, ringside tickets for the fight in the neighborhood of $45,000 each.
Wow. And the face was
10,000. It was 10,000. Yeah. It was 10,000. And those were tickets that we were paying 3 to 3.5 times face value to get.
Wow.
Again, a situation where we had to pry them out of people's hands to successfully deliver those to clients. I have a great story. The Beijing Olympics, I had a client who was there on their way to opening ceremonies, and they needed another ticket. And they said, can you get me another ticket? And I was like, yeah, a runner will meet you at the train stop, because we were already on site and doing work with the event. And as the party that was trying to get this extra ticket got to the train station to meet my runner, they were separated. They were directed by officials, if you have a ticket, go this way. If you don't have a ticket, go this way. Anyway, they couldn't connect, and at the last minute to get this person a ticket near their other tickets and deliver it literally within a couple of hours of opening ceremony in Beijing, it was a $15,000 ticket. Mm-hmm. And the client, once they got separated and we could find them, were like, here you go. And he's like, yeah, I don't want the ticket now. My group is separated. I'm just going to go to a bar and watch it. And so I'm like, what do you want me to do? He's like, good luck.
Wow.
A really good client. A really good client. It became my most expensive souvenir. The most expensive.
Sounds
ticket.
Like a really good former client.
Actually, he's a wonderful client, still a great client, and we made it up on other deals since then. But at the time, he was just like, you know, what do you expect me to do? And I was like, what do you expect me to do? I was never able to sell it, and it got down to the point to where once somebody offered me what they did, I said I'd rather keep it unused as a souvenir than sell it. And so I carry it in my briefcase everywhere I go. It's a ticket that cost $15,000 unused to opening ceremonies of the Beijing Olympics. And over time, I made the money back from my client on many other purchases.
So is it right for me to assume that any ticket where I have to enter a lottery is something that I can probably sell for more than I pay for it?
I don't think it's wrong for you to assume that, because typically the rule is the more difficult it is to acquire and the more effort you have to put into acquiring it, the more value it will have. But what we found is that sometimes the illusion of being able to get the ticket makes people believe that they can't truly get it. So yes, it's hard to get a master's ticket. And yes, you have to go through a lottery process. And yes, you might have to know somebody, or you might have to give your left kidney to get it or something. And then people think, well, then the
as
average
long
fan,
as it's not my left testicle. Yeah,
exactly. The average fan will think, hey, there's no way I can go. It's just never going to happen. And so they give up. And so then the demand actually drops. And here you are having put in all this effort to acquiring the ticket, believing, why wouldn't somebody want this ticket? And it's because there's been so much press about not being able to secure the tickets that people just, they truly give up and they put their attention elsewhere. I even back 5 years ago here in Las Vegas, when some of the Cirque shows were the most popular shows and hard to get tickets here in town, that we spent tons and tons of time trying to acquire those tickets. I could never understand how somebody would stand in a line at the casino waiting for tickets to get opened by the casino for anybody who had returns or anything. So somebody gets in line at 4 o'clock, hoping to get a ticket that's released before showtime at 7. And typically those lines are right next to the poker room or slot machines. They'll stand in a line, buy lunch for, you know, $10 bottle of water and a $15 sandwich and throw $40 into a slot machine and spend 2 or 3 hours of their vacation standing in line to possibly get a ticket when they could just come to me and spend $30 or $40 over the initial price and guarantee themselves a ticket, have it delivered to their hotel, and be done with it. But it's just an interesting system.
Well, they might not know about you.
And that's why we're here today, to let everybody know, including gamblers, especially gamblers, of what to do with their tickets if they have extras or how to acquire tickets around the country.
What does your crystal ball tell you that your how your business will be different in 5 years than it is today?
So I see that digital becoming more and more prominent and prevailing in the space. If you want to be in my space as a ticketing professional, you have to be willing to adapt to technology. You're going to have to be nimble. You're going to have to be very well versed in technology. You're going to have to spend the bulk of your finances and resources and time investing in technology, and which is different than 5 years ago when we spent all that time investing in people. It will be about technology.
Very good. So we're getting your contact information in the show notes. Is there anything else you would like our listeners to know before we let you go?
I think two things. One is don't let the name fool you. VegasTickets.com is more than Vegas. Mm-hmm. We do events throughout the United States and around the world. As I mentioned, the Olympics, Australian Open Tennis, which is going on right now, Wimbledon in the summer, London Theater, just FIFA World Cup. So we do events around the world. And then secondly, know your rights about ticketing. Understand that when you purchase a ticket and fight for them. If you own a ticket, you should, if you've paid your hard-earned money to buy a ticket, you should have the right to do anything you want with that ticket. You know, Ford Motor Company shouldn't be able to come in and tell you that the only place you can resell your Ford is at a Ford dealership. So the rights that you have when it comes to any other commodity that you can buy and sell should apply to owning your ticket.
Very good. Thank you, Roger Jones. Now, at this time of the broadcast, we usually do a recommended. So, Richard, do you have anything to recommend to people?
Yeah, my recommendation this week is something called the Ralphie Inflatable Pillow. So
how do you spell Ralph?
R-A-L-T-H-Y, and it'll be in the show notes. But if you take long plane flights and you want to try to sleep, you know, I've tried neck pillows and leaning against the window and all these kind of things. And this one, it's inflatable, and it's kind of like a big triangle. So it's a wedge shape, and it's got a hole in the middle of it, so you could put it on the tray table and put your arms through it and rest your face on it, and you can put it in a number of different positions depending on, you know, how high up or low down you want to be. So anyway, it's just great, at least for me, flights.
You've tried it and you like it.
Yep.
All right. My recommendation, I actually have two of them, and they're both for you to go read something. One is an obituary about a guy in Connecticut named Joe Heller. He was kind of a practical joker, and when he died, his family put together an obituary that has basically gone viral. So if you go to Google Joe Heller obituary, it is definitely worth reading. You will enjoy that. I learned about it. There was a New York Times article on it. It's called The Wackiest Obituary and What Happened Afterwards. And it's the New York Times article is behind a paywall. If you do not have a New York Times membership, subscription, whatever they call it, you get, you know, 5 a year for free or something. And other than that, you have to pay for it. But you can go to the obituary itself, and it's definitely worth doing. The second thing that I would like to recommend is also worth reading. And it is something that I recommended before, but it's been several years. We have had a guest on this show twice who has won lotteries by using his brain. He has a difficult name. His name is Mohan Srivastava. It will be in the show notes. But he entered a short story contest in his home country of Canada, and he won. It's a story about a Scrabble game. So if you type in Mohan Srivastava.
Yeah, good luck with that. We'll put a link to it in the show notes.
Well, if that's too difficult, probably typing in Joe Srivastava will also work.
Right.
And but it'll take you 10 minutes to read this story, and you will like it, I promise. All right. So thank you, Roger. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.